This is Dr. David Pomeroy, your host on ADHD Focus. I wanted to remind you that the show is not intended to be a recommendation for diagnosis or treatment of any condition for any specific person. Please consult your mental health professional or doctor managing your ADHD or mental health issues about any diagnosis or treatment-related information that you hear on the show. Refer your ADHD provider to the show if he or she would like more information.
Hello, this is Dr. David Pomeroy, your host for ADHD Focus, the podcast that is out to counter the myth information out there about ADHD. And my guest today is Linda Rogley, the founder and inventor of the Women's ADHD Palooza. And we're going to be talking about what I think is kind of the elephant in the room with ADHD, and that's shame. I think it's at the root of social anxiety, the reactive rejection sensitivity, possibly, certainly a lot of depression, anxiety. A lot of the things that show up have a root in the shame we have felt and had inflicted on us. So we'll talk more about that and let you know how all that works. Linda, it's great to have you here again.
Thank you so much for allowing me to be, David. I really appreciate it.
So tell us about the Palooza.
Oh, the Palooza first? Okay, I thought we were talking about shame first, but let me just tell you, the ADHD Women's Palooza, it is something that I had wanted to do for a very long time, and I wanted to have a live conference for women, but then everything went online. So in 2016, Terry Matlin and I got together and said, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to have the cream of the crop of ADHD experts, and we've been doing this every year. Well, Terry's not involved in that, but she's one of my guests this year, as she always is, as is Dr. David Pomeroy. So delighted to have him on the Palooza this year as well. But we have sometimes 30, sometimes 35, sometimes 25. This year we have more than 30 experts. And this year in particular, the topics are really dazzling, I think.
Yes, we're talking about a great selection of.
Yeah, we're talking about things that we've never talked about on the Palooza. And that's my intention, is to bring new topics, new faces, new people, and the most accurate information, just as you're trying to do with your podcast, David. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing. And I invite everyone to come. It's free. You don't have to pay anything. And it's all week long from the 1st of April. And it's not a joke, even though it's April Fool's Day. We're going through the 1st of April all the way through Friday with the recordings, and you have 25 hours, 27 hours or something to listen to them free. And there's also a live event on Saturday, and you pay a little bit for that, but that gives you an opportunity to talk to other ADHD women. And frankly, that's sometimes just as important as hearing from the experts, because we are kind of experts as well. We live with this every day.
Yep, and absolutely.
Just so everyone knows, I definitely am part of the tribe. So,
if people just search Women's ADHD Palooza, I'm sure they'll come up with it. I'll have the actual detailed URL in the introductory text to this podcast, which you can find at www.targetingadhd.com, which is my website, and click on podcasts and you'll get right there. So let's talk about shame and how shame shows up in ADHD, and hopefully we'll get to what we can do about it. And I'd like to start by acknowledging two people whose books are certainly my main resources on this, and I think both of them are great. The first is Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, and she talks about shame, developing shame resilience, what shame looks like for men and for women. There are different sets of things, and some of how to deal with it. The other is The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk, who is a psychiatrist and excellent writer. And it goes into the end of the brain workings behind trauma and how that shows up differently in different people, And most importantly, the second half of the book is what you could do about that. But just how the brain works and how emotions and memory flip us into immediate reactions is wonderfully outlined in that book.
Absolutely.
So, Linda, you said you had Brené Brown's definition of shame.
I do. And I have done a lot of work with shame, especially around with ADHD women, since that's who I work primarily with. She says shame is the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing that we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. And if that doesn't ring a bell for everyone who's listening, I will be very surprised. That
yes.
piece about being flawed, and it's not just the ADHD. We believe that we are flawed. So we're going to talk a little bit about, again, about the origins of shame and how early it sets in. And so go right ahead. Tell people the difference, though, between guilt. We talked
shame
about
and,
guilt. Yeah.
Because you can feel bad about having done something. And that's focused on what you did was wrong, an issue, whatever. But when you feel you are bad, that's shame. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about that. Something I don't think parents necessarily are trying to shame children. And it can just be in the words we use to say, you're a bad boy. Mm-hmm. Well, that comes across, you are. You are bad. Mm-hmm. As a boy, you're bad. As opposed to, you know, you really shouldn't have done this. You did something that's not a good choice. You did something that hurt your sister. And that's a behavior, but it's not you internally. And I think as those messages get repeated, you're lazy. How come you never do this? You didn't turn your homework again, you just haven't figured out things, that starts to become our self-talk.
Absolutely.
And then it's, oh, there I go again, I'm a dummy. And that's the shame part.
And the sad part of that is, I want to go back and talk about little girls for just a moment, but the sad part of that is that
yes.
when we repeat those messages to ourselves, we suddenly aren't even aware of them because we've integrated them so
yeah.
deep into who we are.
Yes.
And the sad part is that then we won't even attempt things that will even reinforce that because we already know we're going to fail at it. So it really restricts mm-hmm. our ability to even try on new things, even though ADHD loves new stuff. We're all about, this new and shiny and so forth and so on. But so we can talk a little bit more about that later, but I just want to back up a little bit because you said something about being a bad.
Yes, please.
And that really is true. With those words used to come out of a lot of parents' mouths. And I would like to believe that it doesn't happen too much anymore because I think we're a little bit more enlightened. But I think sometimes even parents who know better fall back into that. And
mm-hmm.
it's so what I'm hearing is that it's outside messages that come in. We aren't born believing that we're bad. We are born into the innocence of the world, right? And we're curious and we make mistakes. And those mistakes get interpreted as, oh, you shouldn't do that and blah, blah, blah. And so we get all these shoulds and can'ts and don'ts and all that kind of stuff. Suddenly we're in this little cage of things. And for little girls, especially, girls are socialized to be social. They're socialized for relationship. Their brains are actually bathed in estrogen when they're in utero. And when they're born, they've actually had done research to show they put tiny babies, I mean, only a few weeks old, in a little carrier. And then they would have someone's face come into view. Not just a face, it would be a person. And they did the same experiment with boys and girls. And what they found was that the girls locked onto that face and held the eye and the gaze, whereas boys would look briefly at the face, and then just kind of like, well, what's more interesting? They just weren't as socialized, which means that the way this ties into shame is that girls tend to pay a lot of attention to what other people look like and the expressions that they hold and the words that are used with them. So a little girl may do something that mom says is naughty, and she does it again and she does it again, or she does something else that gets piled on top of it. And eventually, just as David said, it really becomes, I didn't do something wrong, I am wrong. These girls will internalize that message, and they get so attuned, their antenna are so sensitive to noticing that someone else is going to say something bad about them, that someone can just look at them sideways, and suddenly it's the look. Exactly. And what happens to girls, and I think this is true for boys as well, but maybe in a little bit different way, is that they, you know, we've talked here about rejection sensitive dysphoria. Girls tend to crumble under that. And then what they learn is that that's not very well accepted. You're walking around like a crybaby all the time, that kind of stuff. So then they begin to build the mask and the protection so that they can be feeling really hurt behind it, but be able to put on the mask and say, I'm fine. Yeah, that was really funny. Ha, ha, ha. Even though someone's making fun of them. So it is actually a double whammy for girls, especially ADHD girls. And we haven't gotten into ADHD yet, because ADHD, as we all know, who are on this podcast and paying attention to it, if we're paying attention, wink, wink, wink. we have a lot of don't do that. Oh, you screwed that up. That's not good. So we have many more of those opportunities to have that negative feedback, and therefore build more evidence that, you see, I am bad. I am. And so
we end up hearing that so much.
Yes, exactly. So what ends up happening is that we end up trying so hard to be good that when we aren't and we get caught, then we feel like, uh-oh, they've seen behind my mask. Now they know just how I truly am. And it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for children to grow up with that. My granddaughter is 14, and I see it in her so much. She's not diagnosed yet. I'm pretty sure she has ADHD. She thinks she does, but I see it in her, and she's so anxious and she's so worried about what people think. And it just is heartbreaking because she's amazing. All kids are amazing. They make mistakes. Don't we all?
And I think, certainly, plenty of people worry about what someone else thinks. And I think back to, I'm sure nobody wants to go back through 7th, 8th, 9th grade again. Oh. But yes, exactly. But what I recall is the worry about, am I going to wear the right things? What are these for? What's that person saying something about me? And that, because of that socialization part for girls, is magnified. And that's one of the things Brené Brown talks about. One of those top things for women is, am I attractive? Am I wearing the right things? Am I saying the right things? Am I just look attractive? Right. And that kind of message, I think, comes up with the look, the visuals. And this is when, you know, someone's saying, well, you're naughty. There's this, the look. I know there are times my father would look at me and I think, uh-oh, just stepped over line. Pull back.
Exactly.
And one other thing that may figure in at some point, and for some people, is since people with ADHD, many of us had an ADHD parent, not sure whether either of mine was, but, and people with ADHD also, many people get into drinking a lot. And I recall going to a conference given by another doc. It was about adult children of alcoholics.
Yeah.
And he was writing on the board as I came in, and he said, the three rules of an alcoholic household: don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. I might as well have been hit by a 2x4.
Really?
I thought, oh, that explains a lot. And that fits into the shame of don't say anything because you're going to get nailed about it.
Right.
Don't trust whether mom has a hangover or not, or what's going on. And by all means, never show how you're feeling.
You
and
bet.
I think that's the...
Well, it's too dangerous.
Exactly, the mask.
Right.
And not necessarily, you don't need parents that are drinkers, but that.
Well, it's the uncertainty of it, though. It's like you never quite know what's going to happen. Are they good? Am I good? Are they happy? Are they unhappy? And you never know. Mm-hmm. So
am I going to make another mistake because I'm a bad.
Exactly.
Oh, boy, I can't do this. And then it gives rise to perfectionism, anxiety, and a lot of other things that are wrapped up, particularly in the ADHD parts of it.
Absolutely. And you know, what I was just thinking about that was that you may have grown up in an alcoholic family. Some of you may have grown up in an alcoholic family, but remember too that undiagnosed ADHD is often self-medicated with other things. And they may not have been taking drugs, but they may be using alcohol, they may be using marijuana, they may be using something, street drugs, who knows?
And they may be using being on the internet, they may be using work, or any number of things, gambling, all kinds of things. You're going to have that same, you can't trust who's going to show up.
Well, and so addictions are rampant because addictions tie into dopamine and dopamine ties into ADHD. So when we do things that are inherently dangerous, like, oh, I'm going to gamble because this time I'm going to win big, that activates that dopamine. And suddenly we're paying attention just in the same way an emergency does, which is more positive, right? We don't want emergencies. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But our dopamine kicks in there too. And we're heroes or heroines, whereas we're gambling and we lose, they're not thought about so well. And then that reinforces again, you see, you are a bad boy. Even you might be 40 years old and you're still hearing those voices. And they might not be conscious, but because, as I said, they get so automatic in our brains that we have to kind of pull them apart. So anyway, all right.
And that the brain chemistry, how the brain works with other triggers show up so fast we don't even realize they're happening. And this is just the qualities of the brain, way it works. When you have whatever the, what I'd call the root event, the thing where you feel ashamed about, that is put into memory. Mm-hmm. And there's an emotion with it, an emotional memory.
Yeah.
The stronger the emotion you feel, the more indelible the memory, the stronger it is. Right. Well, there's an area in the brain called the amygdala. I love that word. And it has connections to more areas in the brain than anything else, any other structure. And that's the emotional filter. Every input coming in to your brain, whether it's what someone's saying, what you're seeing, anything else, passes through that filter. And that's right next to the memory center. So there's a quick, you remember anything about this? Is there a risk here? No, it's okay. Or, oh, alert. And bang, you go right into fight or flight, faint or freeze, to other parts of that one. Nothing's going through the thinking pathways then. And that's universal. It's not just with ADD. So when someone is fighting and really angry, that's not the time to use logic because they aren't in the thinking mode.
Right.
And where that, if it's fight, if it's you've been shamed, people who fight blame someone else, they attack. Flight, you want to escape it. You want to numb to get away from that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Faint and is just, I want to just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And freeze, and people will say this, I did it once too, go into a test and just, you've studied, you know the material, and it just is gone.
Yeah.
And so that kind of thing happens so fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something, oh, well, wait a second, that's not too bad. Nope, it's happening so fast. And that's where it gets hidden. We don't notice it unless we specifically start to kind of unpack that And this is what one of the things Brené Brown talks about in her book of when you realize, boy, this is a shame moment. And it takes some practice to do that. As soon as you hear yourself or someone else saying should, that's a real big clue that that's what's going on.
Well, and the other messages that we often will hear in our brains and it's just normal is, you idiot. What did you do that again? You are so dumb.
Yep.
They're going to be so pissed off at you because blah, 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 blah. It's all that.
Yeah.
That
I'm so dumb.
Yeah. And I actually just talked to a client this week and she said, I've decided I'm going to stop telling myself I'm an idiot. And I'm like, yay, I'm so happy. Yes. But it's easy to say, it's not so easy to do, but at least it's the very basic, the twinkle of understanding. And then that becomes more about noticing and then paying attention to that. I love the fact that, you mentioned the memory centers as well, because the more intense the event, emotional event, the more emotions attached to a memory, the stronger it is. And you will probably, there are some things that trigger me that I have no idea what the original event was. I have no idea. But boy, I just collapse. I'm on the floor sobbing, right? Like I don't alone, just so to be clear, it's not sympathy that I want. I want to be away from everyone because I don't want them to see me in this state, which is the ultimate piece of shame, is that I have to be, I need to be shunned. Because I am certainly not worthy. And I have to say, David, that when you take this to an extreme and shame becomes that spiral, and we've heard about that a lot, but it just continues to feed on itself, it actually can get into self-harm. It can actually go all the way to not only depression, but it also can go to, I don't even belong in this world. So why should I be in this world? So.
Should I inflict myself on other people kind of thing?
Exactly. I am hurting those people by even being in their life. So, and we know that that's not true. We all have a unique reason to be here. Otherwise, I worked with Jack Canfield a long time and one of his favorite sayings was, you know, we all were supposed to be here because guess what? We won the sperm race. We're supposed to be here, right?
Think of it. But I think one of the things you just said can be something that's a clue in terms of awakening that awareness. When you hear yourself saying, I am an idiot. I am so dumb. That's I am. You're talking about who you are.
Yep.
And saying or thinking, I did something idiotic. That's an action. Yes, you can feel guilty about it, but that's, you did it, but you aren't an idiot in yourself. Yes, what a good thing to do. And that's that, are you defining yourself as that's who I am? Right. Or saying, that wasn't a good move.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because we all make bad, poor choices. And you make
mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we get to the point of, like when I was a kid, I would rehearse things ahead of time so that it would look like it was the first time I was doing it, but it wasn't because I'd rehearsed it because I didn't want to look stupid in front of someone else, you know? Mm-hmm. So a lot of this is outside feedback coming in and we believe it. And that's the key, is that we believe the story that they have told us. And then it gets to the point of, They can, like, for instance, when I was in high school, a group of girls was in the same department store. I was with my mother and they were laughing. I was convinced they were laughing at me. And it never even crossed my mind that they were laughing among themselves and it had nothing to do with me. And that's one reason I think ADHD folks will take things personally. It's all of a sudden, it's always about me. And how self-centered is that? I'm sorry to say,
not sure how you're going to be received. So you're watching and thinking about it. And meanwhile, the background is, well, I'm not really very good. I'm not good enough, smart enough, wearing the right clothes to be on a level of with those girls. And right there, that's going to help that interpretation. our minds jump around so fast and pull all those things together really fast.
Exactly. So let's talk. I'm going to change gears here for just a minute.
And
I want to delve into the shame that we have specifically around ADHD. And I think once we are diagnosed or suspect that we have an ADHD brain, there are certain things that suddenly we are ashamed about that. And even though we can't change this ADHD brain. Most of us were born with it and we're going to end up dying with it eventually, not too soon, I hope, but it's just there. So there's sometimes when we find out about our ADHD, it's like, oh my gosh. There's something wrong with your brain, like you have some mental deficiency or something. So a lot of folks will feel bad because they won't even get diagnosed or they won't take medication because they don't want anybody to know about it. I just before our session here today, I Googled shame and there was somebody on one of the social media things that it was an 18-year-old girl. And she said, I'm not going to take my medication because if I take my medication, then I have to actually believe that I have ADHD. And it was so painful for her that she didn't even want to do that. And what makes this even worse is our friends or our families may not even believe in ADHD. They ridicule it. They tell jokes about it. They make fun of it. And frankly, there's a lot of ridicule on social media at this point. I mean, it looks funny. Yeah. Oh, they forgot again kind of thing. But you know, when you're on the inside of that, it's not really that funny.
No.
And yeah, it really is very, very painful. So if your own family doesn't believe in ADHD, and some of my family doesn't, to tell you the truth, even though they have it, what we believe is that we don't really believe it either. It's like, I just want to read you a quote that I, from one of the women that responded to my survey a few years ago. She says, there's a narrative running through my brain saying, it's not really ADHD. I'm just lazy. And if I tried harder, everything will be just fine. I just need to work more, use more timers, and put more reminders on my phone. Does that sound familiar to anybody? I mean, I'm putting my finger up a guy's like, oh my gosh, I don't even want to even have the ADHD. And the world out there is right that I'm just lazy, crazy, stupid, whatever else that is. What do you think about that, David?
I think that's, definitely one of the things that comes up to me, the first step, and Sari Solden brings it up too in her book, Journeys through Adulthood, ADD Adulthood, that accepting the fact, okay, I have ADHD. Yes, it would have been nice if I'd either known about it a long time ago and things would be different.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to have it. Well, you do. And it's not it's not because you're defective. I think it's a very, very too bad that the words chosen to describe it and the official diagnosis is attention deficit disorder. It doesn't mean we're deficient in something.
Yeah.
In attention difference disorder. Yes, we have a difference. We pay attention to other things. Yep. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's not because it distracts us. But that definitely that feeling of, oh, no, I don't want to have that. And some of that, the more people have heard the negative things out there, either, oh, well, everybody has ADHD or you're just lazy. Don't tell me you've got that. Don't. It's an excuse. That's a crutch to say that.
Yeah.
No. And people who don't have ADHD, those neurotypical, or as one patient of mine says, neuroprivileged people.
I love it.
They don't understand it because it just doesn't make sense to them. Of course, you just do that. You wouldn't forget your keys or just go off in some other thought. When someone's talking, you stay with them and track what they're saying.
Exactly.
They have no concept of how it all works. I wish someone who knows a lot about programming virtual reality things could put together even 5 minutes of this is what it's like inside an ADHD ADHD brain. If you were in this environment and you had ADHD, this is what you'd go through. And I think most neurotypical people would tear the glasses stuff off within a few minutes. How do you do that? How do you deal with that? Hey, welcome to my world. I've either learned how to sort out what the important things are, or you know what? 9 o'clock at night, my meds aren't there, and I'm having a great time all over here and there, bouncing around those ideas. Bill Dodson says one of the toughest jobs he has is convincing people with ADHD not to play in the sauce of their minds.
I love it.
I love that because sometimes that's just a lot of fun, and we can go places other people and figure out how we got there.
Absolutely.
But
we never bore ourselves, that's for sure. We are never boring.
No.
We can get bored, but we are not bored inside.
When we get called out, you know, the spouse who says, "Were you even listening?" Or, without doubt, "You didn't hear a word I said, did you?" And oops, there we go. I'm not considerate. I'm bad. I'm not doing the right thing.
Right.
And it takes some work in a relationship to get that to, "Did you take your meds today?" Or some kind of cue word that you got to come back and pay attention to me here.
Exactly. Well, I mean, we can be shamed because we don't take our meds. We can also be shamed if we do take our meds. "Oh, you're just a drug seeking person. Oh, I get it. No, you don't really want that. That's a fake diagnosis," blah, blah, blah. Kind of going back to that other piece here. So I know we don't have an unlimited amount of time. So I just want to move on to some of these other things that one of the places that ADHD shows up that is so devastating to us is at work, because we get a job and we're so excited about it, and we're in our first 90 days or whatever, and we're really paying attention to it because it's all new and shiny. And then 6 months later, it's kind of like we're coming in late, or we're not meeting deadlines and all that stuff. And again, that has a profound impact on our standard of living, because we don't earn as much money as we might. And that starts really with education, because we do the same thing with getting through high school or getting to college or through vocational school or whatever it is. The woman that I had who was in that same survey said, "I've constantly underachieved and I earn a mere pittance. I just haven't made my mark in the world. I always thought I would do something great, but I could never make it work." And she sinks into self-doubt and back to that shame again of not wanting to even tell people what she does for a living. "I don't want to tell people. I don't want to tell people that I'm just a fill in the blank." And that is profoundly important, because at least in the Western world, a lot of emphasis is put on who you are is what you do kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So we kind of fall behind, like, "Oh, well, all the other people in my class are over there doing this," right? They've got a retirement account. I can't even get, you know, barely make my salary. Well, you know, I can barely make ends meet in the salary kind of thing. So anyway, and that is difficult too. And I know I'm kind of stringing these all together, but it's difficult because we also tend to overspend because of the impulsivity, or because I think it's not just impulsivity. I think it is restricting ourselves so much that we just say, "I'm done. I just want to spend some money. I just want to buy that computer." And it's not
impulsive. I deserve to have something to do what I want.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Another issue that came up in the survey that I was talking about, and the survey is for ADHD women 40 and better, so it doesn't include men, but I suspect that these issues are similar for men as well. This one is about lying. This person said, I lie about situations that are too difficult to face. I lie about mistakes and then people don't trust me. I always feel like a bad person for my ADD failures and my inability to be truthful about them. So we lie to kind of get out of something, the little white lie kind of thing. But then we feel
the flight away from shame. Nope, it wasn't me.
Exactly. And so another reason that ADHD has so much shame is that we have this emotional volatility, right? We have this emotional, they call it dysfunction, whereas just as you said that stuff comes up instantly, that trigger, and it immediately comes forward with the amygdala, the same thing happens with emotions. We are either angry or we're sad or we're overreacting rather than responding. And that's about our untreated ADHD. Now, I must say that some of these things are about when we are untreated or our medication is worn off or we aren't taking good care of ourselves. We're not getting enough sleep. All the things that work for every single one, just so you know, not just us, but to everyone.
Yeah.
And when our medication wears off, sometimes we just, and then people, my God. And then we're feeling bad. Because, oh, I shouldn't have said that. I laughed too loud. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we go back in the little corner. I'm just not going to.
Yep. You want to faint. You want to just disappear. And the lying is okay. I'm going to escape. I'm going to fly away from this.
Exactly. Well, I mean, the opposite happens too, David, is that when we shut down and everybody's talking and we just don't say anything because maybe because we can't follow the conversation because we got too much going on in our head, the sauce in our head.
or we think we're going to say the wrong thing. We're going to be ridiculed.
Exactly.
So
this is the last one I'm going to read. It's mostly we really hate ourselves a lot of times. Several people said this to three different people. One person said, I detest the face I see in the mirror. Doesn't that just break your heart? It broke my heart.
It hurts.
I know. The other one says, I ruminate over how I could have done things differently. You know how when you say something and then you put your foot in it and then you go back for 3 days and think, if I just would have said that, right? And then the final one is, no one can say anything as harmful to me as I say to myself. And that is that self-talk.
Yes.
This is the universe of shame. If you didn't understand what we were talking about before, this is the universe in which we all swim a lot of times, right?
Right. The self-talk and self-compassion.
Right.
You know, if we stop and listen to what we're telling ourselves, would you talk to your best friend that way?
Yeah.
They wouldn't be your friend for too long if you did.
Absolutely.
Say, you ninny, why did you do that? Are you kidding me? You're so dumb. You're not going to have that best friend at all.
Exactly.
And so we don't treat ourselves with that same consideration with realizing, okay, people make mistakes. You made a mistake.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I wish you hadn't said that. And let's talk about it because I felt uncomfortable. And instead, it's, I'm so dumb. I said things again, and I hurt that person's feelings, and I'm just not good at anything.
I can't even be a good friend, for heaven's sake, you know?
Yeah. And the other not good at anything is that I've seen in a number of girls, it seems to be, at least shows up in the academics part, if I'm perfect, if I work to and absolutely get everything perfect, then I'm not going to be criticized. So I'm going to escape being shamed and feeling that shame of being criticized. And I've had so many girls in high school patients, they are up till 1 a.m. because they're determined they're going to finish all the homework and it's going to be excellent. So then they get sleep deprived because they have to get up at 6.
Right.
But they have great grades. Well, you couldn't have ADHD. You have good grades.
Exactly.
And meanwhile, the boys give up either by 7:30 or soon after. And they're off, whether it's video games or shooting hoops outside or go hanging with friends, hopefully not speeding around in their car and getting into car accidents, which we're also at more risk for. But that perfection. And yes, I think boys feel that in a different way. And the shame is, I shouldn't be on the basketball team. I just blow it. I miss passes. I don't keep track of the plays, or you playing an instrument. And yep, there we go. I missed the notes again, and that's going to mess things up. I can't do a performance. I can't even be part of an orchestra. I shouldn't be here. Maybe you are part of the orchestra, maybe. But, well, I shouldn't be here because I'm making more mistakes and I'm not able to do this one particular passage well. And we compare ourselves to others in that comparing. See, they can do it better than I can. I'm not good enough. And that's what it comes down to. That's what we feel. We are good enough.
Well, it takes a lot to convince us of that, I will say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I know there are many people shaking their heads saying, no, I really am not. Well, you may not have done some things that were helpful. You may have done some things that hurt yourself or hurt others. Those are mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. But it doesn't say that you're defective, that you are damaged goods. Not at all. And it takes a while to realize some of the ways your brain works. Other people can't do that. One person just yesterday said, and he's now a senior in college, he says, I realize I love historical research and my ADD helps me because I can really, really dig into a subject and learn and put together all the details and then put together a different picture of it than if I just kind of read a few things. And so he's learned how to channel his hyperfocus into that. He's also, he said, and now I have a really good organizing system, and he's different folders and everything else. Yeah. Said before, I just have one folder for the quotes for a paper, and they were all a mess inside. So that's the strategy he's used. But he realized that his hyperfocus, which, yes, can get us into trouble, we're hyperfocusing on the wrong thing, but that helped him do something he loves to do.
I love it. I love it. And I love the organization system. What I always recommend to my organizing clients is that we compartmentalize things. Even if you just have to put one piece of paper in one folder and you have a title on it, I don't care. I mean, and if you file, you don't have to file alphabetically. You can file however you want to file.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yes. And even if you put two pieces of paper in the file, that's two more that aren't on the desk cluttering up other things and covering over the bills you didn't pay yet. And it's little steps.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I want to talk about a little bit is, what do we do about all of this? So let's shift gears into something. Oh my God, it's so terrible. Into, you know, there are things we can do, and certainly strategies are important, but understanding, and that starts with understanding what ADHD is. I have some clients whose spouses or partners know more about ADHD than they do. And then unfortunately they use it as kind of a club to beat them over the head. Why aren't you doing this? And why aren't you using this strategy and all that kind of stuff? Which I just want to take just 1 second and talk about relationships. You were talking about boys and the orchestra, et cetera, but another place that we get a lot of shame is in relationship, especially when we're dating, and boys, it's kind of like, I am the girl that I'm with, right? Or the person I'm with, maybe a boy, maybe somebody else, but I am the person I am. My goodness and my lack of shame is based on whom I'm with in the moment. And then they break up and suddenly the shame comes all back, and it must be because I'm a terrible person. It's not, oh, I have ADHD. It's not never that. It's always, I'm bad. They don't love me. I'm not worthy of love. And when we get older and we actually meet someone that can stand our ADHD, actually, they really do love it, to tell you the truth. That's why they chose us. We get into a relationship, and then sometimes the shaming comes after that. I do, or we move in together, or that kind of stuff. And it all of a sudden, it was fun at first to have all these exciting things going on with that ADHD brain. And suddenly it's, why can't you at least be quiet when we're talking about blah, 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 you know? So you can have a lot of shaming from an intimate relationship as well as from outside in the world. And that is a horrible situation. So what Ned Halliwell says is that, the two things that are most important for us ADHD folks is to have the right job and marry the right person, or be with the right person, partner with the right person, because the difference in support versus criticism is incredible, especially when it comes to that shame spiral that I was talking about before. So first of all, so understanding about ADHD in general is important, but it's equally important to know how your ADHD manifests. And you're like, oh, well, of course I know how it manifests. I'm always late, and that's how it manifests. But not everybody with ADHD is late, and not everybody has the certain thing. So it's that unique finger footprint or thumbprint.
Yeah,
that is exactly
everybody's
you.
Everybody's got their own flavor. And a heck of a lot more flavors than Baskin-Robbins. There are a lot more than 31
more than
flavors.
31? Right, exactly. But I just have to be, you have to be clear here. Learning about ADHD and paying attention to your ADHD doesn't translate to, okay, then if I can fix it, then I won't be ashamed. That's not what this is about.
Yeah.
And you
and
said
that's where the,
yeah,
the, that neurologic thing that happens so fast, that is the, we're telling ourselves, we're hearing, I'm bad, I'm always late, those kinds of things.
Right.
And if we little by little can hear myself saying, I should have, wait a minute, should, somewhere there's shame in there.
Yeah.
And we can learn to, little things that may be harder, but learn to identify the body feeling we have when we're ashamed.
Right.
And one thing that Brene Brown said, first shame, name it, but when she first identifies that, to just say pain, 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 which names the fact that, yes, that's what I'm feeling, pain. It hurts to feel this way.
Exactly.
And then talk to someone you trust about it. And that's where a friend, spouse, partner who isn't going to criticize, is not going to judge, they're going to listen and say that must not feel good. That must be really tough to go through.
Yeah.
They're going to tell you what you should have done differently or how you might do it better next time. Just going to be able to listen. And that helps get it out there. And something that she mentioned, I hadn't known about, I think it's great, writing for 15 or 20 minutes a day, even 3 or 4 days, has a positive effect in reducing the impact of that and making a big difference in terms of getting it out there and getting it out of you.
And so what are you writing
understand.
About? Okay, David. So
you're writing about that shame event and what you're feeling.
Got it. Okay,
and
cool.
Identifying. Yeah, I say I should have done this.
Yeah.
What am I ashamed of? What's going on here? And it doesn't have to be, you know, a PhD dissertation. It doesn't have to be anything. Write what occurs to you. And if it doesn't make sense to anyone else, it doesn't have to.
They don't need to read it. They shouldn't be reading it.
No, you're just putting down whatever comes up in the feeling, and you may end up writing about something that happened when you were 14.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's some of the connections that are in there. So you can discover some of the background of
Absolutely. I just found this other quote from another person who said, if I forget to put my glasses on and trip over something, I don't think I'm a clumsy idiot. I just realize I have a problem in the vision category and I need to use whatever help I can get, in this case, glasses, to deal with it. The same is true for our ADHD. We need to use whatever we can to deal with it. And in this case, you're mentioning having help from someone else. I think that makes the isolation of ADHD or any other condition is what makes it worse. It amplifies it because we only have ourselves to reflect back, and we're reflecting back things that may or may not be accurate. So the story that we're making up about it may not be true, and usually isn't, when we fall into this kind of, I'm bad, I hate myself, I don't want to look at myself in the mirror, all that kind of good stuff.
Yes, so, and I
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I'm gonna switch topics here. I'm gonna talk about taking responsibility instead of blame.
Okay, great.
All right. So what I used to believe in my ADHD brain is that there was win or lose. I didn't like the word compromise. It's like it's either right or it's wrong. It's that black and white thinking that many of us have. But I didn't understand that if something went wrong and I was involved in it, then I had to take all the blame. Like if there's blame in the room, I'm walking through, I get all of it, right? If there's anything happened, it's all my fault, right? Mm-hmm. And what I finally realized through a heck of a lot of therapy, was that there's a difference between taking blame and taking responsibility. So I just jotted down some of these things. The blame, it's all my fault. Or sometimes it can be, it's more like blame someone else. It's not my fault. I didn't do it kind of thing. Yeah. And it's basically two sides of the same coin. Responsibility is something like, I understand that you're really angry that I'm late today. That's taking responsibility. You understand what that person is upset about and you say, and it's still saying, I'm late today. That, and then the follow up to that is, it can be something like, what can I do to make this different? Well, you can just get here on time the next time. I got that. And what you know is that sometimes I do have trouble getting here. So is there a possibility that we could work out a different schedule for me? And they may say no. I mean, you don't always get what you ask for heaven's sake. We're not little kids saying, I want this. But we can actually, I hate the word negotiate too, but we can negotiate so that we take responsibility for our part of it. That's the thing, is that I used to take 200% responsibility for everything that happened, the blame actually. And what I know is that it's 50-50. Maybe the requirement to be in at 6:15 in the morning is that's just not the right place for you to be. So maybe you just need to be in a different job, or maybe it's everybody's late, and maybe it's unrealistic for everyone. And it's not that you can say, well, you need to change it then. That's not what this is. It's like, it's humility, and it's also not pat in hand. Okay, I'll do better. That's a totally different thing too.
And taking that responsibility in that case is one of the things then that's central in Brené Brown's book, The Daring Greatly, is vulnerability.
Yes, yes.
Allowing yourself to be vulnerable by saying, yes, I did something wrong. Mm-hmm. I was late. You can have all the excuses you want, but it still amounts to the fact that you were late, you're walking in 15 minutes late. Then, yes, I was wrong. Sorry. And how can I make it up? How can I change it? And if the person you're talking to says, well, just don't be late. Okay, I've got to come up with me. Yeah. How can I change that? And that's where maybe talking to a coach, talking to your spouse, and going through, what can I do to back up to what I thought was going to take 5 minutes that was really 15?
Right.
I really didn't need to wash the dishes before I left the door fold the laundry or do any of those things. And so being aware of the time, but taking that responsibility exactly is being vulnerable and saying, yeah, that was me. I made a mistake.
Exactly.
I'm not dumb. I'm not inept. I'm not incompetent. I made a mistake.
Human. Oh, yeah. Human. Yes. Oh, yeah. That kind of stuff. Well, I know we're going to be running out of time here soon, but I just want to say that the last thing on my list about what we can do about it, and there are many, many more things, but, and that is to forgive yourself, which is very difficult for us. And the phrase that I always like to use is that if you could have done better, you would have done better. You're not making these mistakes on purpose just to make yourself look bad and fall into a shame spiral. That's not what's happening here. If you, and that's not to say, well, then I should have done better. No, you would have done better if you've been able to, given the circumstances that you were in that moment, this was the best you could do. You don't say, oh, I'm just going to slough this off. I don't even care about this. Most of us do not want to do that. Most of us really do want to turn in a finished paper and do all that kind of stuff. So you go from, I'm not good enough. I've never been good enough. Nothing is ever good enough. I'm going to give up to I am good enough. I have enough. I've done enough. I forgive myself. I might even, oh my God, love myself. Too much.
Well, forgive yourself. And something I'd say if in terms of we learn by experience. What's experience? Making mistakes.
Yeah, exactly.
Learn from our mistakes. So that's how, when we're born, we don't know how to do everything perfectly. And you try one way and that doesn't work. Okay, made a mistake. You know, right. Thomas Edison was asked, you tried 1,000 times to make a light bulb and it took you all that time. Did it bother you made all that mistakes? He said, no, I just learned 999 ways that didn't work.
Exactly.
Learn something. Wasn't a mistake. Okay. I know that doesn't work. Let's go to the next step.
Exactly. I love that. Before we go though, you talked something before we got started about micro moments of shame. Can you talk a little bit about those before we go today?
Sure. So those are the things that you're walking by. The laundry isn't full. Or you go to put the laundry in the washing machine and the stuff that you washed 2 days ago is still in there and you haven't put that in the dryer.
So, yeah.
Or you're going upstairs and this thing you left on the foot of the stairs to take up, you didn't pick it up. Maybe you didn't see it on the way up. On the way down, you see it. I was going to do that. Mm-hmm. Those little reminders that I should have done that. I was, and right. I didn't. So, I failed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just get something else on your mind. Great. You'll be going upstairs another time.
Yes, I guarantee it.
And maybe instead of putting it on the bottom step, because you're looking up here as you go up, put it on the fourth step when it's right there.
Oh, I love problem. We are so good at problem solving. So all we need to do is apply it to us, right? We are brilliant. We truly are brilliant. And I don't care what your IQ is. I don't care what your creativity. We are brilliant problem solvers, no matter what. And that's because we have all that sauce going around.
That's right. So we need to solve the problem for my sound engineer by saying, it's been wonderful to talk with you, Linda. And I hope everybody listening and watching has had a chance to learn some of the ways shame shows up for those of us with ADHD and what we can do about it. Because there are ways to change. This show, this podcast, will be aired next week. And you can find it on my website, targetingadhd.com. It is also on Spotify and Apple podcasts, as well as streaming on Roku and Fire Stick. When my producer said she was so happy she got a contract with them, I said, great, what's that? I don't know what Roku is, and I don't have a Fire Stick. So this is Dr. David Pomeroy, and I very much appreciate Linda Rogley being with me today.
Been wonderful.
And we shall see you another time. And meanwhile, don't forget to register for the Palooza coming up. And we'll catch you next time. This is Dr. David Pomeroy, your host of ADHD Focus.